Fizzy had been unable to raise her paladin level since her main role was supporting Cora, but at least her healing-related skills had gained a decent amount of proficiency. There had also been a certain amount of material gain from the expedition, as the group had encountered several stone-hewn treasure chests during their trek through the maze. These contained an assortment of random loot which the dungeon used to draw adventurers further inside, just like the wooden ones that Boxy had imitated in its home dungeon. The greedy mimic had naturally wanted to plunder each and every one it had come across. It even had Snack steer the group towards them despite having to take detours and walking into dead ends. Having to dispatch the golems guarding the chests had made the trip slightly more difficult than it needed to be, but the monster in charge was certain that its endeavor would pay off. It was therefore quite miffed to find that the rewards were not worth the effort. Though the first two beautifully carved containers had yielded a sizable pouch of gold coins and a case of healing potions, the next nine were far less encouraging. They held only common items like food, drink, clothing, and various works of art which, while high-quality goods, were of little to no use to Boxy. Fizzy, on the other hand, really wanted some of those things for herself, especially the appetizing jars of honeyed apples and sturdy-looking apparel. She felt that the mimic might have been willing to part with those since it clearly considered them to be unshiny junk, but had been too afraid to ask. Though it was hard to read what an animate chest was thinking, its increasingly frequent hissing and growling made it obvious that it was growing more and more pissed off as time went on. Once the group had reached the courtyard at the base of the spire, Boxy confirmed that there were no immediate dangers before assuming its spellcasting form for the first time that day. The look on the pseudo-Zero's albino face made it immediately apparent that it was just as ticked off as the gnome had imagined it to be. However, if its seething glare was any indication, its mood hadn't been caused by some disappointing loot boxes. At least, not entirely. No, the source of its ire was certainly not something, but someone. Seeing this made Fizzy instinctively curl into a whimpering ball on the ground, even though the absolute obedience she had displayed today made her unlikely to be the cause of Boxy's foul mood. Valeria could likewise be excluded since, while she had soaked up most of the XP, Boxy understood that certain compromises were necessary in order to ensure a safe hunt. The undead, as well, were entirely blameless, as it was impossible to force responsibility onto something that was not even self-aware. The only remaining suspects were the two familiars and the mimic itself. And, seeing as the wrathful box was a master at deflecting blame and Zira had done an excellent job of guiding it through the maze, this narrowed the list to one red-skinned moron.
Shadowbone!
The mass of darkness flew from the staff in Boxy's hands and hit Cora squarely in the back of the head, the impact nearly knocking her to the ground.
Hey!
She whined.
What gives, boss?
Your information was bad.
No, it wasn't. I told you everything I found out while you were away last night, didn't I?
Then why did they become enraged so often?
One reason so few of their undead had made it this far was that the stone soldiers had become enraged many times, seemingly at random. When that happened, they would throw their spears at the back line and pull short, sharp swords from their own bodies. At that point, they would abandon any attempt at defense and attack with much greater ferocity.
I told you that would happen, though,
she complained.
It's not my fault those things got broken, what with all the attacks flying around.
But if their spears were broken, then how were they able to throw them?
The mimic countered. The golem's sword slashes had certainly been dangerous, but nothing the front line couldn't handle. It was the spears that had been the real problem. The heavy stone projectiles were powerful enough to take out a skeleton mage in one hit, even managing to kill Snack on one occasion. That had brought down the group's ranged firepower, meaning that it had taken longer to defeat the soldiers, which, in turn, meant that the front line had taken more damage. One could argue that Boxy's treasure-hunting detours were just as much to blame, but that wasn't how the box in charge saw things.
Spears?
Cora raised an eyebrow.
What do spears have to do with anything? Everything!
Fizzy couldn't help but scream at the fiend, considering that one of those things had nearly taken her head clean off.
You said that They get super pissed and start attacking like mad if you break the shaft of their spears. But almost all of the ones that came flying at us were in pristine condition.
Very good, Fizzy,
Boxy commented, satisfied that its tiny protege had been paying attention.
So, Arms, anything to say for yourself before the punishment starts?
Cora closed her eyes, crossed two of her arms, and scratched her nose with a third as she pondered the situation.
Oh, wow,
she exclaimed after a while.
I guess I really should have worded that part better.
Worded what part?
I wasn't talking about their spears.
And indeed, the trigger to the stone soldier's enraged state wasn't their weapon breaking. No, the golems had one more sizable shaft on their bodies, one that no male in their right mind would want damaged.
I was talking about their dicks.
Part 5. Boxy was forced to resummon Cora after it was done educating her on the importance of unambiguous reports. Admittedly, it could have forced her to fight even after it had pulled out all of her hair, stabbed her in the eyes with her own broken horns, and torn off most of her limbs, but that would have been suboptimal. Entertaining, but suboptimal. Once the freshly scolded fiend was back in peak condition, the two of them joined the rest of the group, who had taken the opportunity to rest. Both Fizzy and Valeria had needed a break, as they were mentally exhausted from the constant fighting and needed to be in good condition before tackling the spire itself. The courtyard appeared to be a sort of safe zone where monsters did not venture, so they had taken the chance to sharpen their focus a bit. That said, the stone statues dotting the area were making them rather nervous, as there was no telling whether they might suddenly leap off their marble pedestals. Of course, it was also possible that said pedestals were part of the mechanism through which the dungeon created its golems, but if that was the case, then they were quite inert, at least for the moment. After making sure that everyone's HP and MP had fully recovered, Boxy ushered the others towards the dungeon's titular spire. After seeing it up close, it really did appear to be sculpted from a single piece of black stone, its surface smooth and slightly reflective. However, the mimic couldn't spot anything that looked like an entrance, at least not on the side visible from the group's current position. It circled the structure with Cora and the surviving high-class undead taking the lead, but could find no way in even after doing two full laps around it.
Nasty!
It called.
Go inside and look around!
Whatever you say, honey.
The lich merrily turned immaterial and attempted to fly through the solid surface. However, it would seem that the black stone was warded to prevent that sort of intrusion, as she slammed into it face first, much to the amusement of the other girls. Fizzy and the two demons were apparently united in their disdain for Valeria, albeit for completely different reasons. Zira saw her as an arrogant upstart unworthy of serving her beloved master. She thought the same of the gnome, of course, but at least the tiny woman knew her place, not to mention that she would serve as a good training partner for Boxy's socialization practice. That, and she could really swing that wrench when properly provoked, so she wasn't completely hopeless. Cora disliked the lich because of the roundabout and lazy way she fought her battles. From the fiend's point of view, it was the undead minions that did all the work while their mistress sat back and tossed out the occasional spell. In actuality, even though she appeared to be idle, Valeria had her hands full commanding the mindless undead. A blockhead like Cora had no way of knowing such things, though. It also didn't help that the fiend was fully aware of how outmatched she would be if the two were to fight. While she was certainly capable of snapping Valeria like a twig, that would only matter if the lich allowed Cora to catch her. It was only natural that the demon would dislike something she was incapable of smashing. As for Fizzy, she still put the blame for her traumatic experience squarely on Valeria's shoulders. She found herself constantly thinking about how much better off she'd have been if not for that dead slut. Well, relatively speaking, at least. Plus, her newfound nature as a paladin caused her to instinctively resent the undead, especially ones with such a high level of taboo. But no matter how much she wanted to get rid of the lich, she couldn't. Not only would she lose due to the sheer difference in power, but Boxy refused to allow even a hint of infighting amongst its minions.
Master, above!
Zira shouted suddenly. The mimic immediately turned its gaze upward to see a trio of shadows swooping down from the sky. It didn't have time to think, as one of them was coming down straight above it, so Boxy dodged hurriedly to the side as the thing fell to the stone-tiled ground with a loud crash. The others hit with just as much force, the second squashing the last remaining Death Knight and the third landing directly on top of Valeria. Luckily, she was still under the intangibility effect of her ethereal body skill, so she got off with merely a scare and a slightly bruised ego. Not wasting any time, the mimic leaped into the dust cloud the impact had kicked up and coiled itself around the closest of the intruders. Though it may have obstructed regular vision, the dust screen was no match for its magical perception abilities. It could see that the thing had wings, and thus would likely lift off unless it was stopped. The intruders soon revealed themselves to be a trio of animated gargoyle statues, stone golems not too dissimilar from the soldiers in the maze. They were similar in height and humanoid in shape, albeit with much thicker shoulders, torsos, and arms, making them look more like gorillas than humans. Four solid, bat-like wings sprouted from each of their hunched backs, and their faces were carved into the likenesses of various beasts. The one that had aimed for Valeria had the face of a troll, while the one that had landed on the Death Knight looked like a snarling tiger. The gargoyle which Boxy was coiling itself around bore the likeness of a wolf. Much like the murderous Box had assumed, the gargoyles attempted to rise into the air almost immediately. Their goal was most likely to stay out of harm's way while they positioned themselves for another attack. Boxy wrapped a number of tentacles around its target's wings, but that didn't seem to stop or even slow the gargoyle as it flew into the sky, reaching an altitude of 30 or so meters in an instant. It would appear that the creatures didn't even need to flap the thin sheets of stone to gain altitude. However, the supernatural currents of air flowing from the appendages made it clear that they were not just there for decoration.
"Get everyone ready!"
it commanded telepathically.
"I'm bringing them down!"
"Understood, Master!"
Zira saluted. Boxy wasted no time applying metal mimicry to its tentacles, covering them in rows of sharp steel teeth, and then moving them up and down the wings of the wolf-faced gargoyle like an improvised chainsaw. The freakish appendages tore ruthlessly through the larger monster's flesh, grinding and chipping away at its rocky hide. Boxy's attempts to cut off its wings flooded it with numerous damage notifications that were more distracting than it would have liked. Its victim began to thrash about, rolling in midair in a desperate attempt to shake the mimic off. It would appear that it had only just noticed it had a passenger, but by then it was far too late. The mimic had firmly ensnared it and chewed through the base of its wings, snapping them off one after the other. The tiger-faced monster tried to aid its comrade as it flew past, attempting to punch the monster off the wolf head's back. However, Boxy countered by biting down on its stone fist with its steel-coated jaws, much to the would-be savior's distress. The flying golem tried to pull its arm away, but the mimic's powerful lid muscles refused to let go so easily. Boxy finished breaking through the third wing, which was finally enough to sabotage whatever skill gave the gargoyle flight. It plummeted towards the ground, threatening to drag both the mimic and its comrade along with it. Boxy promptly released the crippled creature from its tentacled grasp and hurriedly coiled itself around the tiger-faced gargoyle, subjecting it to much the same treatment. It heard a heavy thud from below, most likely the one it hadn't yet touched repeating its dive bomb attack. The sound was followed by a second, slightly softer impact as the mostly wingless wolf gargoyle slammed face-first into the ground. After damaging the tiger head's wings sufficiently and hitting it with a blast of corrosive acid for good measure, the mimic finished gnawing its way through the gargoyle's arm and fell through the air. A pair of demonic wings sprang from its backside, allowing it to glide in the direction of its last target. The troll-headed statue appeared to have some sort of grudge against the undead, as it was currently positioning itself to attack one of the two remaining Dullahans. However, it had finally noticed that its two brethren were no longer able to fly. Realizing that something must have been responsible, it turned about in midair to spot a bizarre, spider-legged, demon-winged chest gliding straight towards it. Rather than face the monster head-on, it chose instead to increase its altitude even further, putting it well out of the mimic's reach. It had deduced that the strange box was incapable of full flight, and likely assumed that avoiding it would be simple. What it didn't see, however, was the invisibility-clad succubus that had flown up to support her master.
Fireball!
Zira's spell hit the last flying gargoyle dead on, engulfing it completely in an explosion of flames. Her devouring flames clung to its craggy skin, but on the whole failed to do much damage. It seemed the flying golems were significantly more resistant to magic than the ground variants. The demonic pyromancer was also unfortunately incapable of using ice, which was a golem's bane. Not only would it do significantly more damage, but would also paralyze the constructs as it disrupted the flow of mana within their bodies. As much as Zira hated to admit it, Valeria was better suited to this type of opponent than she was. That said, she certainly had no intention of backing down as she channeled her next spell at the troll-faced statue charging towards her.
Fireball!
The spell hit the gargoyle directly in the face, but it brushed it off easily and kept flying unperturbed, clearly intending to crush her into pulp with a swing of its massive fist. The succubus used invisibility once more, effortlessly dodging once the monster had lost its target. She repositioned herself and launched another two fireballs, setting the pace for the aerial cat-and-mouse game. And Zira was really good at games. While that was happening above, the rest of the team had their hands full fighting the two grounded gargoyles, with Cora and Fizzy teaming up to take on the wolf-headed one. The fiend had first engaged the living statue in a duel of fists, but things had rapidly devolved into the kind of chaotic brawl one would expect to see in a pub. There was no technique or logic to it, just two meatheads bashing each other over and over and over. The pint-sized paladin had initially thrown a couple of holy lights at the demon to keep her going, but the more Fizzy healed her wounds, the less effective her berserker skills got. She judged that a far more effective means of offering support would be to create an opening for Cora to use her martial arts. While they didn't require chanting, the fiend couldn't just pull one off on a whim. She needed a few moments to prepare and then go through the necessary motions in order to properly activate one of those techniques. The gnome surged forward between the two pairs of legs, doing her best to avoid being stepped on. Her eyes and weapon both glowed with yellow-green light as she triggered her divine wrath skill and took an enormous, two-handed swing with her solid steel wrench. It initially appeared as though she were aiming at thin air, but then the gargoyle's leg moved directly into the path of her swing. Fizzy was a champion of chaos. While certainly not as powerful as Bob himself, she was still able to subconsciously read between the lines and measure the variables to calculate the most likely outcome. This seemingly complex skill manifested itself in battle as a form of precognition, provided that she was focusing her attention on a single target. Ghostly outlines would dance in her vision, painting a picture that only she could see. Although at first she'd thought she was going crazy, she had later realized that her enemies would often make the exact same movements as the ghosts several moments after she had seen them. This was merely a prediction, however, and wasn't foolproof. There were times when multiple possible outcomes branched out before her, and she had to make a snap decision as to which one to follow. But, after some practice and a lot of observation, the gnome had realized that the thickest, most clearly defined shadow was the one denoting the most likely outcome. In this instance, she had seen that the gargoyle would be knocked just slightly off balance by an extra heavy hit from Cora. It would wobble a bit and readjust its footing, bringing its leg right into the path of Fizzy's swing. The heavy tool smashed dead on into its stone knee with a heavy crack, forcing the stone statue to stumble. Seeing her opportunity, Cora immediately moved forward. She stretched all four of her arms wide, then swung them inwards to smash the stumbling gargoyle's ill-fitting face.
Head crack!
All four of her fists hit the wolf's head at once, two from each side. A deep crack spread across it, and a large portion of its head broke off completely to fall to the ground. Fizzy, who was still underfoot, delivered another heavy blow to its damaged knee, this time managing to break it completely in half. She had to roll out of the way to avoid being crushed by the stone statue as it tipped sideways and fell. It stretched out its left arm as if to catch itself, but the limb had already been badly damaged in the brawl. It snapped clean in two under its tremendous upper body weight, letting the golem crash to the ground.
War stomp!
The fiend then put her boot down on its chest for good measure. It withstood the attack far better than the stone soldiers had, but the art was still enough to break its torso into two large chunks, neither of which showed any signs of movement.
Yeah!
Cora cheered, throwing her arms triumphantly into the air.
Get some! Watch it!
A voice squeaked from below.
You You almost stomped me flat!
Oh, right. You were there. Sorry, Squirt, but you're just way too tiny! Ha 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 ha!
Fizzy sighed in exasperation.
One of these days,
she grumbled inwardly. Looking around, she spotted that Boxy, Valeria, and the two remaining Doulahans had ganged up on the tiger-faced gargoyle. The hammer-wielding knights were doing an excellent job of keeping the stone creature busy. They skillfully blocked or parried its attacks while counterattacking at every opportunity. Unfortunately, they seemed to be doing very little actual damage. That was fine, though, as the mimic appeared to be going full ham. It had transformed the tip of its tongue into a large steel ball with thick, short spikes jutting out of it and swinging it around like some sort of flail. As for Valeria, she was completely still, floating with her hands in front of her face as though she were gripping an invisible watermelon. Upon closer inspection, she appeared to be chanting something. After a few seconds, a strange ball of unnaturally bright blue smoke materialized between her palms.
By the cursed ice, I command thee, become brittle like glass, and shatter!
She finished her long chant with some ominous words, while Boxy and the two headless knights stepped quickly back. The blue smoke snaked forward as if it had a mind of its own, and, finding no other target, coiled itself around the living statue, seeping into its body and turning its stony skin from dull gray to a pale shade of blue. Boxy charged as soon as the curse took hold, tongue flail swinging. It hit the target squarely in the chest, causing the stone creature to explode into pebbles with a single blow. The curse of shattering Valeria had just cast massively amplified the physical damage taken by those affected by it. While powerful, it unfortunately required a much longer chant than most spells, which was a fairly common trait among invocations derived from the hexcraft skill. Plus, it was difficult to boost the effects of a curse through skills other than hexcraft or taboo. Aiming them was exceptionally tricky as well, due to the way they moved erratically rather than a straight line. In fact, it could be said that curses had the nasty habit of disobeying their caster's wishes and latching onto a completely different target. These drawbacks were the reason the Lich hadn't dared use a curse against Boxy during their confrontation. Even if she had managed to conjure a curse, the odds of hitting the agile mimic were practically nil. Yet despite the multitude of ways that a hex could misfire, be interrupted, or just plain fail, successfully landing one would inflict debilitating effects so powerful that the victim was as good as dead. For instance, of the three other hexes Valeria had access to, the Curse of Silence would prevent the use of martial arts, skills, and spells for up to 20 seconds. Then there was the Curse of Fatigue, which rapidly drained stamina and dulled movement for about 3 minutes. Lastly, and arguably most horrifying, was the Curse of Solitude. It completely cut off all sensations such as sight or touch, leaving the target's mind trapped in a world of pure darkness and total silence for as long as 30 seconds. Though they retained full control of their body, they were completely unaware of what was happening around them. Or to them. Needless to say, being hit with any one of these curses in the middle of a battle was nothing short of a death sentence. Despite the longer casting time and unreliable targeting, hexcraft could be a source of immeasurable power to those that used it wisely. Although such power came at a price. Curses were a violation of the taboo of Lunar, the goddess governing matters of wisdom, magic, and learning. Her teachings dictated that curses and hexes were to be avoided, lest they pollute the world's ambient magic with their foul energy. The phenomenon could be plainly seen here, where mystical energy known as mana was thick in the air. The blue smog that permeated the smashed-up gargoyle's remains was slowly leaking out of them, staining both the air and the ground with the remnants of the curse. Not that anyone present gave a damn about that sort of thing when they still had one more flying gargoyle to deal with. At least until the troll-faced statue came crashing to the ground in a blaze of fire, picking itself up from the ground almost immediately after. While all of its wings and its health appeared to still be in good shape, it was no longer able to fly. Though this was the first time Zira had fought these things, she knew full well that anything which defied the laws of physics by necessity used up MP as compensation. As she herself owned a pair of fully functioning wings, She had realized almost immediately that her enemy's flight was clearly impossible without the help of a sustained skill. She therefore had focused her attention on chipping away at her target's MP with her Devouring Flame and Mana Burn skills. Devouring Flame. Overwhelming fire leaves behind naught but ash and cinders. Requirements: Level 5 Pyromancer, Intelligence 40. Type: Toggled. On. Activation time: Instant. Cost: None. Range: 100 meters. Effects: Increases the MP cost of pyroclasm spells by 20%. Pyroclasm spells will apply Devouring Flame to your target for 5 seconds. Devouring Flame inflicts damage equal to 10% of the initial hit each second. Increases the damage of Devouring Flame by 20% per level of this skill. Mana Burn. A Pyromancer's Flame can burn away magic itself. Requirements: Level 10 Pyromancer, Devouring Flame, Intelligence 45, Wisdom 45. Type: Passive. Range: Self. Effects: Devouring Flame effect will reduce the target's MP by an amount equal to 25% of its HP damage. Increases the duration of Devouring Flame by 0.5 seconds per level of this skill. While the gargoyle may have had tons of HP, the rule of thumb was that tough yet stupid monsters had a tiny MP pool in comparison, just like a certain horny friend. All Zira had had to do was keep showering the statue with fireballs until it was no longer able to sustain its magically induced flight. And now that the creature had been thoroughly grounded, it found itself facing down four beings that were more than eager to shatter it to bits. After finishing off the last gargoyle, Boxy heard a loud crack and turned to see that a significant portion of the solid black stone that made up the spire's exterior had crumbled away. A tall, oval-shaped hole had appeared in the side of the otherwise featureless tower, some 15 meters from where their party was currently standing. The area guardians of the Emerald Maze have been slain. To the victor go the spoils. The black stairs can now be accessed freely for the next 24 hours. It would appear the gargoyles had been some kind of gatekeepers that had to be defeated in order to allow entry into the sealed tower. It would certainly explain why those three had been noticeably tougher than the other golems they'd faced so far, even if they had failed to defeat the invading group. It also made sense that the dungeon would use more powerful monsters to keep outsiders away from its deepest recesses. However, Boxy couldn't help but dwell on how baffling this arrangement was, as it failed to understand the backwards logic involved. What sort of idiot would design a door that opened once the guards were killed? Then again, this was probably just another quirk of the dungeon. Come to think of it, it did remember encountering something regarding these so-called area guardians once before. It was during the extremely brief period when it had obtained ownership of the Lidogard dungeon complex's stolen core. One of the items in the list of unavailable functions it had seen just before it had realized the core was going into meltdown was labeled Guardian Allocation, or something of the sort. Thinking back, Boxy also realized that it hadn't run across any such entities when it had raided its own birthplace. Then again, it also hadn't been able to repair any damage to its structure, or at least not at the ridiculous rate that this place could. That, combined with the spire of the Jade King's much thicker concentration of mana in the air, made one thing clear. This dungeon was far more advanced than the one from which Boxy had been born. The Mimic was beginning to question whether it was even worth it to enter the spire itself since, if memory served, the dungeon likely also contained things like traps or puzzles. Was there even any point to dealing with such things? After all, it just needed job levels. Surely spending a few days fighting the stone soldiers out here in the courtyard would be enough to get it to level 50, not to mention that the hedge maze also offered the occasional material reward. Thinking objectively, was there any real need to actually enter the place? Boxy glanced at the opening in question as its pragmatic mind considered its options. Suddenly, it spotted something just inside the tower's entrance. Momentarily doubting its single eye, it grew two more just to be sure. But there was no mistaking it. Just inside the newly appeared stone archway was a single treasure chest. Another piece of incentive the dungeon had thrown at it in an effort to entice the creature into overcoming the spire's challenges. or luring it to its death, depending on the point of view. However, this was no simple stone box, but an extravagant, lavishly decorated container that could be called a treasure in its own right. The sight stimulated Boxy's greed unlike anything else it had encountered since entering the dungeon. The mimic threw caution to the wind and dashed towards its prize, completely ignoring its minion's protests. The ornate treasure chest's lid flung itself open as the monster approached, almost as if it had recognized its rightful owner. There was a flash of light and a sinister-looking staff floated up from the container, then hovered lazily above it. The entirety of the staff had been molded from a midnight black metal, including the highly detailed and undoubtedly demonic skull at its top. It had two pairs of eye sockets, one directly under the other, and each of them was fitted with a blood-red ruby that seemed to shine with an inner light. A pair of thick, ram-like horns jutted out from either side, and the open, seemingly laughing jaw was filled with two sets of arrowhead-like teeth. Five curved sheets of shining metal that resembled scythe blades held the macabre sculpture in place, giving the impression of a large creature preparing to crush the skull between its claws. The elaborate head was connected to a smooth, plain shaft that had a red spike-shaped gem attached to its other end. The item was almost 2 meters long, top to bottom, which begged the question of how it had fit inside its container in the first place. Or at least it would have, if Boxy hadn't been too awestruck to even consider questioning the matter. The spectacle before it was perhaps the shiniest thing it had ever seen in its relatively short life. It stared reverently, reaching warily toward it with a tongue tentacle. It hesitated for a moment, almost as if afraid to sully the precious thing with its touch. However, such thoughts were silly and puerile. This was clearly its reward, the dungeon's compensation for overcoming the three gargoyles. So the mimic had the right to do with it as it wished. It slid its tongue over the cool metal surface, reveling in the sensation. Two more tongues shot out and coiled around it, shamelessly licking its prize all over. The rest of the group had followed after seeing the mimic run into the spire. At first, they had tried to stop Boxy doing anything rash, but had given up almost immediately. It was plainly obvious that the creature was lost in its own world, a place where none of their words or warnings could reach. At present, they could do nothing but stare, wide-eyed, as the monsters slobbered all over the inanimate object.
"How enviable," Valeria commented, watching the spectacle with slightly glassy eyes.
It was painfully obvious that all sorts of lewd fantasies were coursing through her rotten head.
"Ugh!"
Cora grimaced in disgust.
"I didn't think the boss would actually go and do that."
"Well, I wouldn't say this was entirely unexpected,"
Zira pointed out.
Really? Then Boxy has done something like this before?
Fizzy asked.
"No, not quite. I was sure that something like this was bound to happen eventually, though. I know my master better than anyone, after all."
Her words were smug, but the lich they were indirectly aimed towards didn't even register their meaning. Cora's eyes went wide as she remembered something that had happened each time they had looted things from the dungeon.
"Wait! We can't bring that thing out of the dungeon, right? Shouldn't someone tell the boss?" "Not it!"
Fizzy immediately spoke up, having no desire to be beaten for being the bearer of bad news.
"Not it!"
Cora also didn't want to get eaten, so she echoed the gnome's words.
"I think we should just let Master enjoy itself while it can."
Zira, on the other hand, would have gladly participated in both of those activities, but she couldn't bring herself to interrupt her master's fun. After all, that wasn't what good servants did. Besides, it was highly likely that the mimic would be distraught once it came back to reality and would seek comfort by devouring its favorite snack. For any dungeon chest, once opened, would soon crumble into nothing, even the intricately decorated, solid gold chest that Boxy was, for lack of a better word, fondling obscenely. As for the creepy-looking metal staff, that was actually a permanent item, and a powerful one at that. Yet it had been brushed off to the side like some sort of unwanted consolation prize. Part 6. Boxy was understandably less than pleased when its beautiful golden chest disappeared into nothing after only a few minutes. However, much to Zira's disappointment.
It wasn't sad or depressed enough to want to partake in snack time.
The mimic was instead flooded with unyielding rage. This bastard dungeon? How dare it mess with it like that? Did it have any idea who it was dealing with? This was Boxy Team Morningwood, Rudolph, damn it, and it would not take this sort of abuse sitting down.
Master, don't forget the staff.
It had been about to storm off with the intent of giving the dungeon a lesson it would never forget, but stopped in its tracks at the succubus's words.
Staff? What staff?
Zira sighed. As expected, her master hadn't even registered the item's existence. It had been so focused on the golden treasure chest that it had completely failed to notice the skull-headed metal staff hovering above it. Which was impressive, considering that it had knocked it out of the way in order to fully embrace its container. The succubus stepped over to where the expensive-looking weapon had been left neglected on the ground. She bent over to pick it up, but the solid metal weapon was much heavier than it looked. She couldn't even budge it, no matter how much she strained her feeble arms and back. Watching Snack's ongoing failure to do something as basic as lift an object from the ground steadily made Boxy's anger diminish. It headed over to where she was kneeling, panting heavily from the exertion, and roughly pushed her to the side in order to see what all the fuss was about. Its pale imitation of Zira popped out of its mouth and grasped the item firmly. Unlike the feeble demon, it was able to lift the object from the ground, though it still struggled somewhat. Whatever this black metal was, it was significantly heavier than steel or mithril.
There was a staff,
Valeria blinked.
Huh, I didn't even notice. Oh, yeah,
Cora exclaimed.
There was something like that, wasn't there?
Now that you mention it.
Fizzy cupped her chin and thought. Boxy's borderline obscene spectacle had apparently caused the others to momentarily forget about the actual treasure itself, making the exhausted succubus lower her face into her palms. It was official. She was surrounded by idiots. Then again, she was perhaps the biggest idiot of the lot for becoming infatuated with an animate chest. But she couldn't help herself. Nobody had ever truly understood her wants and needs quite like her current master. That was why she had wanted to present it with the clearly valuable item in the first place, as satisfying the mimic's greed was the only way to appeal to it. Well, that and entertaining its taste buds, but Zira already had that covered.
Shadow Bolt!
Boxy's sudden spell hit Zira directly in her exposed stomach. There was a brief moment of realization before a volatile mass of darkness ripped a fist-sized chunk from her body, sending bits of flesh flying everywhere. Your spell has gouged out your target's insides. Target HP, -287. The succubus clutched the hole in her stomach and curled up on the ground, her face twisted in something other than just pain. Having confirmed the damage, the mimic put the staff away and tried again.
Shadow Bolt!
Your spell has gouged out your target's insides. Target HP, -207. Quite the difference. It would appear that the fancy staff raised its offensive magical ability by about 30%, significantly higher than the 7% with the plain staff that it had been using thus far. That wasn't all, however. The shiny skull on a stick also boosted its intelligence by 25 points, and even appeared to slightly reduce the MP cost of its spells. It was a significant upgrade, to say the least, although Boxy couldn't be too happy about it. Not when it had more important things on its mind. Chaotic energies swirl around you. Your body has caught fire for 5 seconds. Such as dealing with the after-effects of its chaotic disposition skill. Bright red flames enveloped Boxy's faux wood shell and ghostly white flesh, turning the mimic into a walking bonfire.
Honey?
Valeria panicked.
Are you okay?
I'm fine,
it answered, its tone irritated.
But you're on fire!
I'll get better.
Your body has been burned by the flames. HP -98. Your flesh has been mended. HP +160. It wasn't as bad as it looked, since the magical flame was simply too weak to overpower the mimic's regenerative powers. In fact, it actually helped a little,
since it allowed Boxy to gain some much-needed proficiency in mend flesh and adaptive defense without the risk of actual combat. Not enough to warrant the uncomfortable heat and the unpleasant sensation of its flesh searing, but it was something. Thankfully, the brief delay between the notification popping up and the actual skill going into effect had given Boxy a chance to brace itself. Anticipating just when chaotic disposition would trigger itself was another story entirely, as it could pop up any time its MP was spent on spells or skills. Boxy knew all this because it had already set the skill off at least 10 times during their push through the hedge maze. The first time it had gone off, it had caused the mimic's one eye to go completely blind, although the monster's magical perception hadn't been affected. The second had doubled the damage of its next spell, while the third had caused it to float gently into the air, just like a certain lich. The next time, the skill had attempted to apply the panic spell to the golem Boxy had been spraying with acid, but had failed to register any measurable effect. Other observed effects included a slightly toxic fog, granting double XP from the next monster killed, and shooting a random bolt of bright yellow energy that had punched a hole straight through Snack. Most bizarre by far, in Boxy's opinion, was the skill's claim that it had given its owner the ability to communicate with fish for 5 minutes. Needless to say, it was far from reliable and the effects it produced were irritatingly unpredictable, but at least they were always temporary. Although there were some occasional tasty ones, the majority were either completely useless or downright harmful. The only consistent part of the skill was that it appeared to have about a 5% chance of triggering whenever a spell was cast or certain skills were used. It seemed like only active abilities such as acid spray and storage could set it off, while passives like assassinate, shapeshift, and metal mimicry could not, despite the last of those also consuming MP. The mimic's ire over the disappearance of the golden treasure chest had dissipated almost entirely by the time the fire had extinguished itself. Honestly, it really should have known better, considering that the stone boxes it had encountered earlier had done the exact same thing. It just hadn't cared for those or their disappointing contents, so it had completely put them out of its mind. It wasn't so easy to forget that one, though, as the time spent with it, however short, had been truly special. Its sudden vanishing had left it with a vague sense of betrayal that completely dwarfed the time a certain gnome tried to sell it out. That said, the fallacious object had presented it with a reason to venture deeper into the rest of the dungeon, the clear and confirmed possibility of obtaining powerful magic items. Although the exact properties of such precious things were impossible to determine in the field, it was possible to ascertain at least some of their attributes through experimentation. Still, the only way to get the full picture of an item's bonuses and abilities was to go to a town or city and employ the services of a scribe with the appropriate knowledge and job level. The combination of the identify, appraise item, and detect enchant spells they had at their disposal was one of the things capable of fully revealing an object's physical and magical properties. Having made up its mind, Boxy stopped moping about, rallied its minions, and set off to conquer the rest of the dungeon. Immediately inside the entrance was an open, flat space completely devoid of any furniture or decoration. Every surface appeared to have been carved from the same smooth black stone as the rest of the tower, even the enormous, spiraling staircase. The walls themselves were lined with a number of pale blue crystals that shone with a dim white light, providing some measure of visibility. The sparse illumination seemed to mess with one's spatial awareness, making it difficult to gauge the exact dimensions of the place. It wasn't hard to imagine one's confused depth perception leading to a nasty tumble down the stairs. That said, it wasn't as though the group had much choice. As the circular staircase was the only route presented to them, they began climbing warily. The steps were uneven, gradually increasing in size as they ascended. After only a dozen steps, they had become so large that an adult human would have needed to take 2 or 3 paces before reaching the next one. It was going to be a long, gradual climb to the top, not to mention a confusing one. The lack of any doors or windows made it nearly impossible to gauge how far they had actually come. Knowing that an attack could come at any second, the group had adopted a loose battle formation. Cora and Boxy were in the lead, with Fizzy following immediately after, silently thanking Jib for the break they had taken. It didn't matter how strong or fit one was. Stairs were a universally exhausting chore. especially when they seemed to go on without end. Zira and Valeria were trailing several meters behind them, with the Dullahans, all that remained of their undead army, watching their backs. Elevation aside, the place was still a relatively narrow corridor with precisely two directions from which potential attackers could appear, meaning that it would be nigh impossible for anyone to sneak up on them. Unfortunately, it also provided the perfect opportunity to pincer a group of uninvited guests, which was precisely what Boxy would have done had it been calling the shots around here. Sure enough, their quiet climb was suddenly interrupted by the rapid approach of tiny glass feet scraping against the stones. Within seconds, countless crystalline beetles, each the size of a large dog, were pouring in from both ends of the stairs, skittering over the ground, walls, and ceiling. The two Dullahans at the back turned at Valeria's command to swing their hammers at the incoming swarm, smashing five of the beetles to smithereens in an instant. It would appear that their translucent shells were just as fragile as they looked. Their sheer numbers, however, allowed them to easily overwhelm the two undead, toppling them with little difficulty.
War stomp!
Korra's martial art sent tremors through the surrounding stonework, causing the glassy insects around her to lose their grip on the walls and ceiling. She got busy, swinging her arms and legs enthusiastically as she pummeled them into dust. Boxy and Fizzy rushed to assist her, which left Valeria and Zira to deal with the rear. That, however, was hardly a problem.
Inferno!
The succubus's spell engulfed the corridor behind the group in fire. The sound of breaking glass could be heard within the swirling flames as the intense heat caused the beetles' crystalline bodies to crack. She probably could have held them off on her own, but Valeria evidently resented being upstaged and took matters into her own hands. The lich inhaled deeply and unleashed her sonic scream. The ear-splitting sound was amplified by the stone walls, echoing sharply throughout the entire spire. The resulting screech was much stronger than the one she had let loose during the confrontation at the old Arcanium Tower, resulting in all of the crystal golems shattering at the intense vibrations. However, the beetles weren't the only ones suffering. Fizzy clutched her head, nearly blacking out again, but Boxy grabbed her before she collapsed and tossed her into its storage. While the gnome normally disliked the dark, cramped space, under the circumstances she welcomed its deafening silence with open arms. As for Boxy and its two demons, they were left to endure the horrible wail of the ex-banshee the old-fashioned way. Their formidable mental fortitude attribute scores allowed them to remain conscious, but their bodies still took a certain amount of damage. The scream abated some 15 seconds later, although the ringing in Zira and Korra's ears felt like it would last a week. The fiend had been about to rip her own ears off in desperation, but the screeching had thankfully stopped before she went through with it. Boxy immediately spat Fizzy out, as it wasn't sure when the last time it had recycled the air inside its storage had been. The gnome was a little disoriented, but otherwise fine. Chaotic energies swirl around you. You have obtained new headgear. Boxy's brief use of storage had caused its chaotic disposition to trigger once again. The new headgear revealed itself to be a black, cylindrical top hat, which materialized out of thin air and stuck itself to the top of the chest's lid. The mimic grumbled inwardly, but couldn't complain too much. At least it wasn't something dangerous.
Thanks, Boxy,
mumbled Fizzy, catching her breath. She smiled slightly when she saw the monster's ridiculous new accessory, but refrained from breaking into outright laughter.
Ha! Nice hat, boss!
Korra, on the other hand, giggled brazenly, though Boxy failed to note the sarcasm.
Think so?
It asked curiously.
It is quite a classy one, Master,
Zira stated calmly.
If hats could be shiny, then this one most definitely would be.
Boxy had to agree with her. Even if it wasn't very practical, the top hat did seem to ooze a certain sense of fanciness. As for Valeria, she was surveying the damage she'd caused with a shit-eating grin on her face. The splintered remains of countless beetles were strewn all around, slowly crumbling into dust as the dungeon reclaimed them. The lich gleefully turned around and opened her mouth to brag, but was met instead with a dagger through her throat. She coughed, visions of her first death flashing through her mind.
Don't do unnecessary things!
Boxy snarled, pulling the weapon from her neck. While Valeria may have tried to claim otherwise, there really had been no reason for her to do that. The group had had the situation well in hand and could have easily cleared the swarm even without her help. Granted, there was no telling how long that would have taken since it was unclear exactly how many of the things there had been, but it couldn't possibly have been enough to overwhelm Boxy. The creature's omnidirectional sight and flexible tentacles meant that it didn't have any blind spots that could be exploited with such cheap tactics.
"I didn't let you live so that your stupidity could cause us more damage than the enemy,"
it berated her.
"You need to warn me next time you pull something like that, or it will be the last thing you neglect to do."
"I'm so sorry, sweetie,"
she coughed.
"I'll be more mindful. Please don't be mad."
"All right. Since you understand, I'll let you off with just one stab wound for now."
"Thank you ever so much."
The mimic wasn't being sympathetic, nor was this some bizarre form of forgiveness. It was simple pragmatism. What was done, and she had ended up saving them a bit of time, so it wasn't as though her ill-advised actions were entirely without merit. However, even that small contribution would go to waste if Boxy stopped to educate the Lich on matters of friendly fire. It would do so eventually, of course, but now was neither the time nor the place. The party continued their climb undisturbed, wary of a repeat attack that never came. Either the ambush from earlier had been the dungeon's only means of defense, or whoever was in charge here had decided a repeat would be futile. Regardless, no other traps or enemies appeared to impede the group's progress, even once they had reached the top of the stairs. What blocked their way forward this time was a set of heavy double doors carved from even more shiny black marble. A series of intricate patterns was etched into the massive slabs, indicating that this was probably a place of some significance.
Boxy?
Fizzy spoke up.
Do you think we can take a rest before we go in there?
The gnome's already shaky voice grew smaller and smaller with every word she spoke. While the mimic had said that it would be willing to take a break for her sake, this was the first time that she'd actually dared to ask for one. Though they had spent the better part of the day invading the dungeon, Boxy had still made everyone take regular breaks to replenish their HP and MP even without her saying anything. The stupidly long climb, however, had drained what was left of her stamina.
"Okay,"
Boxy said, much to Fizzy's relief.
"Will half an hour be enough?"
Yes, that'll be plenty.
"Good. Arms, snack. Guard the stairs. Make sure nothing sneaks up on us from behind."
"Understood, Master."
"You got it, boss." "Nasty."
"Yes, my darling."
"You shut up and be quiet. I have preparations to make."
But, surely we can prepare by doing that a few times, right?" "I suggest you do as Master commands,"
Zira whispered.
"Unless you've grown to like being stabbed in the neck." "There's no such thing, you stupid slut. Not everyone's as hopelessly rotten as you."
The succubus scoffed at the sheer irony in Valeria's words and stepped down to join Cora in keeping watch. The pouting lich seemed to calm down a bit and turned around to resume protesting, but was stunned into silence when she saw that Boxy had assumed Zira's form and was sheathed in what appeared to be an aura of crackling lightning.
"Dark explosion!"
The lich raised her hands and clenched her eyes shut in preparation for a blast that never came. After a few seconds, she peeked warily at the mimic, realizing that it was holding a 12-sided, transparent object filled with ominous-looking energy. Her confusion was entirely natural, as this was her first time seeing Boxy prepare a Big Bang Ball, a combination of power overwhelming, crystallized magic, and dark explosion. Boxy deposited the solidified lump of mana into storage and removed a metal toolbox that caught Fizzy's attention immediately. It was one of the bomb-making kits that she had sold to it about a month ago, before her life had gone to utter and complete shit. The mimic opened the box and nonchalantly began putting together some rough hand grenades with whatever leftover materials it could find. After about 5 minutes, its MP had fully recovered, so it stopped momentarily to make another Big Bang Ball before resuming its tinkering. It was highly likely that there was something big on the other side of those doors, and the creature wanted to make sure that it was adequately prepared. It had refrained from using magic until now, since it had wanted to raise its mimic job level, but that was not why it had climbed the spire. It could have gotten all the XP it needed by fighting in the hedge maze outside, so there would be no need to hold back when it confronted whatever was behind that door. Which was where crystallized magic would come in. The skill was at level 5, meaning that the spell crystals would last up to 30 minutes before disappearing. With a production rate of one big bang ball every 5 minutes, the mimic could walk through those doors with full MP and 5 or 6 of them at the ready. The artificer-made explosives could technically be used to help finish the job in case the magic ones proved insufficient, although that wasn't the main reason Boxy was making them. It had simply wanted to pass its idle time doing something productive, and making bombs with the materials it had on hand had seemed like the best way to do it. Unfortunately, it was short on explosive components, so it was only able to throw together 6 basic hand grenades and 3 satchel charges. It moved on to making music boxes with the copious amounts of cogs, gears, and springs in its storage, steadily raising the level of both its artificer job and its clockwork expertise skill. Meanwhile, the 2 demons diligently carried out their orders, keeping an eye out for enemies while humping each other. When questioned, Cora simply stated that she didn't have eyes on her dick, so it was fine if it was buried in Zira's ass. Boxy conceded the point and allowed them to keep at it on the condition that they both remained vigilant. Valeria watched the 2 go at it, her eyes wide. She'd had no idea that the tall, muscular demon had one of those hidden away. The revelation of the fiend's extra equipment had been quite a shock, though it had faded soon after. Pretty soon, she found herself growing excited as she watched them, even going so far as to caress herself between her legs. She threw a few longing glances over at Boxy, but the mimic did not even appear to register her existence. Not only was it entirely focused on its work, but it had already given Valeria her share of affirmative action for the day. It had taken care of that on the way back from retrieving its dagger, which was why it had arrived a few hours later than it otherwise would have. Fizzy also watched intently, though her gaze had been captivated by far less perverse matters.
"So this is how Boxy gained artificer levels so rapidly," she remarked internally.
A veritable storm of screwdrivers, wrenches, tweezers, hammers, and wire cutters was putting together clockwork contraptions before her very eyes. It wasn't just the sheer number of tool-tipped appendages. The mind-boggling speed and pinpoint precision with which they worked was absolutely fascinating to the gnome. The display was so fantastic, so utterly mesmerizing that she could do little more than stare in open-mouthed astonishment, not even registering all the lewd noises around her. She could scarcely believe that the brutish thing was capable of such delicate movements, but it made sense, considering the expertise with which they had flicked and teased her sensitive spots yesterday. The realization that she had just complimented her own rapist on its technique snapped the gnome out of her reverie. That was the one thing she could not forgive, the one thing that had truly hurt her in a way that was very different from the beatings. Or the kidnapping. Or the memory wiping. At least she could understand why the mimic had done those things, but yesterday morning was completely unforgivable. Or was it? Thinking back, Fizzy realized that her captor had never truly shown any real animosity towards her. It had been understandably upset with her at its capture, but it had since shifted the blame for that onto the god's faith-measuring contest. None of the abuse had been because it hated her. In fact, it had become considerably kinder lately. If anything, it actually looked after her. Didn't it? But no, absolutely not. The rape yesterday could never be brushed aside so easily, no matter how hard she tried. It had completely crushed her, leaving the gnome utterly disgusted at the feeling of her own sullied body. She no longer even felt like a living being with thoughts and emotions, and had been silently contemplating suicide ever since it had happened. It would be so easy to do it. She had both the means and opportunity to escape her living nightmare, and the monstrous chest would be powerless to stop her. But she would not, nay, could not do such a thing. Even if her mind wavered, her body remained firm. The biological drive to survive led her to sleep, eat, and drink whenever possible. The unstoppable urge to cling on to her fragile existence with all her might was something the Mimic had thoroughly ingrained into her very being. The Mimic had demanded that she live, and if there was one thing the tortured woman could not deny, it was Boxy's demands. The thing was basically a natural disaster in the shape of a treasure chest. It would appear without warning and for no discernible reason, then proceed to do whatever it damn well pleased, caring nothing for anyone it hurt along the way. It didn't matter how much its victims tried to beg, plead, or resist, they were powerless to stop it. From Fizzy's point of view, standing up to the thing was completely futile. Even if she were to survive the attempt, she'd be left homeless, destitute, and drenched in various fluids, as if she'd challenged a typhoon. Almost exactly like that, actually. Part 7. Boxy ordered its minions to get ready for combat. It had finished its preparations and was ready to face whatever awaited it on the other side of those doors. Cora and Zira stopped their antics and got in position, as did Valeria. Fizzy had braced herself as well, feeling strangely fired up. She just wanted to hit something. Over and over again. Though she hadn't gotten to do all that much thus far, bashing those stone golems had turned out to be a surprisingly effective outlet for her pent-up anger. Probably not the healthiest method of therapy, but an effective one nonetheless. The Mimic instructed arms to open the heavy double doors, and the eager fiend got to work immediately. She placed two hands on each door, really putting her back into it as she pushed them apart. Or at least, that was what she'd meant to do, but the large stone slabs opened practically on their own after her initial nudge. A large, circular chamber lay beyond, its walls, floor, and ceiling made up of the same mystery stone as the rest of the spire. However, unlike the agonizingly long staircase, this room was far from featureless. 20 evenly spaced statues made from even more shiny black stone lined its walls. Though they were all based on the same aesthetic ideal as the soldiers outside, each of the constructs was uniquely outfitted with spears, shields, staves, bows, daggers, swords, and axes in various configurations. One of them was even wielding a pitchfork as though it were an angry farmer. All were currently inanimate, but things were unlikely to stay that way, given the nature of the dungeon. There was also the matter of the room's dimensions. It was easily 30 meters in diameter, which was considerably wider than the tower it supposedly occupied. A chamber so large would undoubtedly be visible from the ground, giving the spire a mushroom shape, but that clearly hadn't been the case. Its actual location was also suspect, as Boxy seriously doubted whether this was indeed the top floor. They had definitely climbed at least 90 meters worth of stairs by its estimate, despite the fact that the tower couldn't possibly be taller than 50. In short, this room's very existence made no sense. Yet, here it was. And the thing most likely responsible for the creation of the impossible space was in this very room. A crystal sphere, roughly a meter wide, floated just under the center of the circular ceiling. It glowed with bright blue light, lighting up the entire room like a miniature sun. The radiant glow pulsed slowly, releasing waves of mana that washed over the group with every heartbeat of the magical sphere. Those waves were so heavy with magic that magically enhanced perception wasn't even necessary to sense them radiating outwards, especially at this short distance. This was without a doubt the magic core responsible for maintaining the spire of the Jade King, and directly underneath it, sitting on a heavy-looking throne, was the dungeon's namesake. The Jade King was bright green, his slightly transparent body shaped like an elderly, bearded man wearing a crown on his head. He was also depicted as wearing clothes and armor, unlike the 20 naked servants around him. The statue's eyelids opened slowly as he awakened, his shimmering, crystalline eyes regarding the 5 intruders into his royal chamber as he lifted his intricately detailed body from its seat. He drew the beautiful sword sheathed at his left, pointing the heavy blade directly at Boxy and its group. His arrogant posture and grand movements exuded a regal demeanor truly befitting of a mighty ruler. The black statues lining the walls moved in unison, kneeling before their sovereign as if this was some sort of elaborate stage play.
the invaders prepared to repel an attack at the sudden movement. But the golems showed no further signs of life.
Who dares?
A deep, groaning voice echoed throughout the chamber, making it difficult to tell exactly which direction the sound was coming from. One would assume that this was the Jade King's voice, but that was debatable, seeing as his lips hadn't moved.
Intruders in my realm,
he continued.
I shall show thee.
The Jade King's speech was rudely interrupted as a small, glassy object struck him square in the forehead. It bounced harmlessly off his shiny skin and fell, prompting the 3-meter-tall golem to catch it in his free hand almost by reflex. A very poor decision, given the nature of the magic sealed inside the crystal. Your target has sustained massive injury. Target HP -760. The force of the blast shook the entire room, sending green shards flying in every direction. Boxy didn't even wait for the dust to settle before throwing the rest of the Big Bang balls it had prepared. Each released a deafening blast of destructive force as they tore through the Jade King's body, dealing damage comparable to that of the first. Notifications informing the mimic that its crystallized magic, power overwhelming, and ruin mastery skills had gone up to level 6, 7, and 9, respectively, flashed through its mind. It was about to move on to the artificer-made explosives before it suddenly stopped, tentacles on the pins, as it realized that there was nothing left to explode. The final guardian of the Spire of the Jade King has been slain. Feat of strength performed. You have unlocked a new perk. Rare Golem Dismantler. Jade. To the victor go the spoils. The dungeon's monsters will become more docile for the next 48 hours. Zira, Korra, Fizzy, and Valeria could do little but gape in stunned silence at the cloud of dust that had once been the dungeon's final boss, their jaws hanging wide open. The only thing left of the Jade King once the air had cleared was a collection of jagged green pebbles scattered all over the floor. The series of blasts, totaling over 3,500 points of damage, had been so violent that a number of them had even embedded themselves in the far wall. The four women could scarcely believe their eyes, but the dungeon-wide all-clear message was definite proof that, yes, it was already over.
Well,
Boxy finally broke the silence.
That was easy.
That's an understatement,
Zira mumbled. The literal king of the place had been defeated so quickly, he hadn't even gotten a chance to finish his speech, let alone order his obsidian retainers to assist him. The statues remained in their kneeling positions, even after their king had been reduced to debris right in front of them. Bits of him were actually lodged in some of their bodies, but even that wasn't enough to spur them to action without orders.
Wow! Darling is so strong,
Valeria cooed.
You should celebrate by ravaging me until dawn.
Such outbursts were by now commonplace, so the rest of the group ignored her and left her to her delusions. She was literally the only one who still refused to accept that the mimic considered such matters a necessary chore, not a pleasure.
I guess Boxy didn't need all those other bombs, huh?
Though Fizzy said that, part of her had expected something like this. After all, the mimic had just dumped half an hour's worth of its MP onto the Jade King. The gnome may not have been all that well-versed in matters of the arcane, but it was hard to imagine that anything could come away unscathed after being blasted with so much energy.
Aw, man! And I was just about to really cut loose,
Korra complained.
It was the perfect chance to take my Berserker Rage for a spin!
Berserker Rage. A Berserker's unyielding rage is both a blessing and a curse. Requirements: Level 20 Berserker. Strength 100. Endurance 100. Type: Active. Activation time: Instant. Cost: 0 MP. Range: Self. Effects: Increases the effectiveness of the strength attribute by 20% per level of this skill for 1 minute. Reduces physical damage taken by 50% for 1 minute. Reduces all damage caused by 50% for 15 minutes once the initial effects of this skill expire. Increases physical damage taken by 25% for 15 minutes once the initial effects of this skill expire. This skill may not be activated more than once every 12 hours. Her master had forbidden her from using the skill in question whenever she pleased. While the boost in combat prowess was fantastic, it came with several significant drawbacks. Boxy had made an exception and given her permission to activate it only if the fight had demanded it, which clearly hadn't been the case, as what had just transpired couldn't even be considered an actual fight. Honestly speaking, though, Boxy couldn't take all the credit for this victory. The Jade King's untimely demise had been almost entirely his own fault. Had he been more quick-witted, he could have dodged those spell crystals easily. Sure, he'd looked tough, and likely had a good deal of resistance to magic, but his behavior had been so moronic that it was almost as though he'd been asking to be obliterated. Not only had he given the intruders a chance to prepare before facing him, but he'd begun monologuing instead of fighting them. Was he an idiot? Had he paid no attention to his opponents at all? He was probably an idiot, right? Why hadn't he attempted a surprise attack, like the gargoyles,